Mulana Jalal ad-Din Muhammad Balkhi Rumi, known simply as Mulana in Persian and around the world as Rumi, was a poetic genius, a theologian, and an enlightened person who graced our planet. 8 centuries after his life on Earth, the deep and diverse influence of his legacy still remains and continues to awaken the hearts of many beyond all cultures and boundaries. His prolific work has been translated into many languages. Rumi was heir to the rich literary and cultural heritage of Persia or ancient Iran and composed his great mystical poems in the Persian language. He was born in the city of Balkh, which was part of the Persian Empire that is today found in Afghanistan. He lived and worked for most of his life under the Seljuk Empire, passing from this world in the city of Konya, which is present-day Turkey. In addition to his poetry, Rumi's prose works, which include Fihe Mafi, or In It What's In It, Majolese Sabae, or Seven Sessions, and Maktubot, or The Letters, also offer his sage insight and wisdom. Today, on Between Master and Disciples, we invite you to listen to an excerpt of Rumi's teachings from the Fihe Mafi, Discourses 28, 29, and 32. Discourse 28. The long, entreating prayer song of seekers and travellers tells the story of lives occupied in labour and devotion, with each effort assigned to its special time. It is as though an overseer of habit draws them to their specific task. For example, when first rising in the morning, they give themselves to contemplation and worship while the mind is quiet and clear. Thus each performs the service that is suitable to them and comes within the scope of their noble soul.
There are 100,000 ranks. The purer someone becomes, the higher up they are raised. This story of spiritual growth is a long one. Whoever tries to shorten it would shorten their own life and soul, but for the grace of God. As for the prayer songs of those who have God, the silent ones whose names are hidden from the world out of exceeding jealousy, you are seated beside them now, but you do not see them. Neither do you hear their speech, their greetings or laughter. Yet what is so marvelous about this? When someone is sick, they see apparitions that others cannot see.
Yet these spiritual beings are 1,000 times subtler than those apparitions, for while the average person does not see or hear such visions until they are sick, they will not see these spiritual beings before they die. Such spiritual visitors know the refined states and majesty of the saints. They watch from earliest morn while 1,000 other angels and pure spirits wait upon the saints. For this reason, the silent ones hesitate infinitely, not wanting to intervene in the midst of such a chorus or disturb the ones they wish to honour.
Servants are present every morning at the door of the king's palace. Each has a fixed station, a fixed service, and a fixed devotion. Some serve from afar, and the king does not see them nor notice them. All the servants know which one amongst them has the honor of the king's presence. When attained union with God, I must speak within the limits of understanding, for their love and the purity of their voices attract holy spirits, pure angels, and those visitors whom none know but the king leaves. The servants attend to that one from every gate, for there is no greater way to serve the king. That one has taken on the characteristics of the king and becomes the hearing and sight of the king for all the others.
This is an extremely majestic station, ineffable indeed. The majesty of it cannot be comprehended by spelling out M-A-J-E-S-T-Y. If even a small trace of this majesty penetrated the world, the letter M would be unwritable, the sound M would be unpronounceable, nor could any hint or symbol remain. The whole city would be devastated by the hosts of light. Kings, when they enter a city, disorder it. A camel enters a house, and the house is devastated. but in that ruin there are 1,000 treasures. Only in ruins may a treasure be found. In thriving cities, a hound is still a hound.
If I have described at length the station of the seekers, how can I explain the states of those who have attained? They have no end, only seekers have an end. The end of all seekers is attainment. What could be the end for those who have attained union, a union with no separation? No ripe grape returns to an unripe grape. No mature fruit ever becomes raw again. Yes, it is unlawful to speak of these things to men and women, but once thy name is mentioned, O God, these words pour out for them. By God, I will not make it long, I will make it short. My life is consumed, but you turn that life to nectar. You say that all is given, but take the soul as thine.
Whoever cuts this story short, it is as if they are abandoning the right road and taking a road into the life-destroying wilderness, where they say, these trees look like the right way home.
Discourse 29. A Christian by the name of Al-Jarrah said, a number of Sheikh Sadr al-Din's companions said, Jesus is God as you claim. We confess that to be truth, but we conceal and deny it to preserve the honor of our community.
Rumi said, God forbid. These are the words of those drunken with the wine of Satan, the misguider. How could it be that Jesus, with such a frail body, who was forced to flee place after place, who stood less than 2 cubits tall, should be the preserver of the 7 heavens, each with a thickness of 500 years, and from each heaven to the next a distance of 500 years, and every earth 500 years, and from each earth to the next 500 years. And under this throne, the sea of spirit, whose depth is even greater, even many times the like of it. How could your reason accept that the ruler of all these is the feeblest of forms? Moreover, that before being born, Jesus was the creator of the heavens and the earth. Glory be to God above what the wrongdoers assert.
The Christian said, his body was mere dust. Dust went to dust, and pure spirit to pure spirit. Rumi said, if the spirit of Jesus was God, where went his spirit? Spirit returns to its origin and creator. If he was himself the origin and creator, where should he go? The Christian said, so we found it stated, and we took it as our religion. Rumi answered, if you find and inherit your parents' false gold, black and corrupt, do you mean you will not change it for gold of sound quality, free of alloy and adulteration? No, you keep that gold, saying, we found it so.
Or you inherit from your parents a paralyzed hand, and you find a treatment and a physician to heal that hand. Do you accept it? No. Instead you say, I found my hand paralyzed, and I will not change it. Or, if you find salt water on a farm where your parents died, and you were brought up, but you are shown another farm whose water is sweet, whose herbs are wholesome, whose people are healthy, do you desire to move to that other farm and drink the sweet water that would rid you of all diseases and ailments? No. You say, we found this farm with its salt water and its ailments, and we hold on to what we found.
God forbid, this is not the action or the words of an intelligent person possessed of sound senses. God gave you an intelligence of your own, separate from your parents' intelligence, a sight of your own other than your father's sight, a discrimination of your own. Why do you nullify your sight and your intelligence, following an intelligence that will mislead and destroy you?
Utash, his father, was a cobbler. Yet when he attained the Sultan's presence, learning the manner of kings and how to be a master of the sword, and the Sultan conferred on him the highest rank, he never said, I found my father a cobbler, so I do not want this post. Give me, O Sultan, a shop in the market so I can practice cobbling.
Certainly, it is right to say that God honored Jesus and drew him close, so that whoever serves Jesus has served the Lord. Whoever obeys him has obeyed the Lord. But since God sends a prophet in every age, manifesting by the hand